The Vatican says Pope Francis had a restful night. Some welcome news after he suffered a respiratory crisis yesterday. Father Frankie Subandi is a priest. He's outside the hospital in Rome.
We are one with the Pope in this situation. We come here to pray for him. We show our solidarity through faith.
An Illinois landlord's been convicted of murder.
A jury has found suburban Chicago landlord Joseph Chuba guilty of stabbing a 6-year-old Palestinian-American boy to death and injuring the boy's mother because of their Islamic faith and as a response to the war between Israel and Hamas. The child's father says through an interpreter,
I pray that this loss, this senseless loss, is the last that we will see, that no child would suffer what my beloved Wadia had to go through.
Chuba faces life in prison when sentenced in May. Jennifer Kuiper, CBS News, Chicago.
While it might not feel like spring, it is, at least on the calendar. Today's the first day of meteorological spring, but the real first day of spring isn't until March 20th, which falls on the spring equinox. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The Dom Salvia Show.
You know, Harvey, the seemingly purposeful no action. What's your sense on the leadership in the Dem Party right now, Harvey?
I'm ashamed of them. What did Trump have on all these people?
Yeah, right.
That we get this kind of silence. Will the Democratic leadership figure out that it's their task to start articulating a Democratic, small d, Democratic vision and project that these people can rally behind? Bam.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
Think about how many people in our communities, our friends, our families, our neighbors, our postal workers, carriers, people that work at our Veterans Affairs hospitals, USDA. Here's what Marjorie Taylor Greene, Donald Trump's lieutenant, thinks of all the people I just mentioned.
Federal employees do not deserve their jobs.
That's what Donald Trump and MAGA believe if you are a federal worker.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Wounded Warrior Project has been there for me since that first day in the hospital. They got me out of the house. They got me connected with other veterans, and they helped me face my PTSD. They support me and my family at every turn. And now I'm helping other warriors realize that they're not alone.
Through our hands-on programs, supportive community, and ongoing advocacy, we help post-9/11 veterans realize what's possible. Learn more at woundedwarriorproject.org/possible.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Heading into the weekend, the tariffs from the Trump administration are set to take effect Tuesday, and Wisconsin farmers are bracing for impact, and some of them know what's coming after being hit by Trump tariffs in his first term. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
Michael Slattery has run his farm in Mirabel for 25 years. He grows corn, soybeans, and canning vegetables. In 2018, when Trump imposed tariffs on China and it retaliated, Slattery says he lost 60% of his revenue. He and many other farmers were left with a surplus of product with nowhere to sell.
It takes decades to build up stable market relationships between an exporter and an importer. And so we were losing our biggest importer of agricultural produce because of these Trump tariffs.
Farmers would be affected twofold, as tariffs would also raise prices on things like fertilizer and equipment parts that are essential to farming operations. In 2023, Wisconsin exported almost $4 billion worth of agricultural products, with China, Canada, and Mexico as some of its largest trade partners. Trump says he plans to once again impose tariffs on those countries. Economics professor Thomas Kemp at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire says Wisconsinites would feel the impact.
You'd see pretty significant increases in prices in American goods markets, and you'd also see American firms looking to alter their supply chains, which I'm sure they are already creating contingency plans.
When Trump issued tariffs during his first term, he promised to increase the number of jobs in the U.S. That didn't happen. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Today, sunshine and a high near 27. Clear skies tonight, a low of 13. Sunshine, 40 for your Sunday. On Monday, slight chance of a shower, mostly sunny, and we warm to 49. For Tuesday, some rain showers and highs in the upper 40s.
Right now, 12 degrees.
Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we hope you had a great weekend. Jane is back. We have another installment of Beyond the Cheese for you. And don't forget, this shouldn't be a thing. Join us.
Matinere on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus, a law review, and yes, my name is Jim Santel. I am your host on these broadcast stations of Civic Media throughout the state of Wisconsin and beyond, joined in the studios of Civic Media here in Radio Park in Racine, my excellent producer, Max. And together in the next 2 hours, taking your phone calls, your questions, your comments, your inquiries, as always, about our ambitious, but yes, as always, achievable agenda, our syllabus for this weekend presentation. That number, 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Inviting your involvement, your participation in our discussion of the major issues facing our nation and, yes, indeed, our world. Rule of law extends just beyond the borders of America into all nations on the face of the planet, underscored with very vivid precision just this past week on Friday, when the United States of America welcomed to the capital of our nation the leader of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, received in the morning a very favorable and warm and hospitable reception on Capitol Hill in the halls of Congress by representatives of our Congress, and only to return down Pennsylvania Avenue later in the day to receive just the opposite in the White House, in the Oval Office of the White House, at the invitation of the President and the Vice President of the United States of America. The conversation, as you all know very well, did not go well, and that is an understatement of huge dimension. One of the things that we're going to be advocating for is the understanding of what happened yesterday as a rule of law matter, as a justice matter, as a fundamental development, not only for domestic policy, but certainly for international policy, that affects the ways in which we think about laws and morals and mores and the standards by which we conduct international diplomacy, but also protect and defend our domestic security as well. Proposition being presented to you in this edition of Amicus, a Law Review, is that on Friday of this week, a new world order established, a new world order that we have not seen since the end of World War II. We'll talk more about exactly what happened in the Oval Office at the White House late Friday afternoon. We'll talk about the consequences of that. And of course, we'll talk about all of that in the context of the larger issues related to this administration, and indeed remembering once again that we gathered last weekend to talk about the new order established by this president domestically in declaring himself the king of our nation, the one who is single-handedly and unitarily responsible for deciding and imposing, articulating what the law is in America. That happened on February 18th. On February 28th, the foreign policy bookend to that happened when the President of the United States of America established not a domestic new order, but an international world new order, making complete his position that he is in charge, and that he is in charge in a way that is contrary to the Constitution and the laws of our nation. We'll talk more about that as well. We necessarily need to talk as well about domestic matters happening in our nation. We will return to a common agenda item that we have talked about before, and that is what's going on at the Department of Justice under the administration of newly appointed Attorney General Pam Bondi. I'm going to talk about one of the major changes that once again fell somewhat under the headlines across our nation. She rearticulated the standards according to which Assistant United States Attorneys and Department of Justice lawyers, prosecutors, criminal prosecutors, and candidly even civil litigators inside the Department of Justice are to make decisions about the cases in front of them when it comes to charging or not charging. It sounds wonky. It sounds very academic. And yes, indeed, at some levels it is. But it changes once again the ways in which laws, the federal laws in the districts in which you live, Eastern District, Western District of Wisconsin, all the other 91 districts throughout our nation and in our territories, changes the ways in which cases will be prosecuted by the Department of Justice in your neighborhoods, in your communities. We'll talk about what Pam Bondi has done, and necessarily then returning to another one of our favorite, often visited subjects, and that is, of course, the Supreme Court. Moving right down Pennsylvania Avenue from the White House to Main Justice and U.S. Attorney's offices, and then returning to Capitol Hill, where the United States Supreme Court has once again been busy this week. We'll tell you a little bit about the summary of cases. We'll talk about the oral argument that had in one major case, in addition to three others, which we'll mention, of just this past week. Yes, somewhat, again, eclipsed by the major news stories of this week, but the United States Supreme Court busy in portions of its regular docket and also issuing a major case, a major decision to suspend for now the decision previously made by a federal district court judge in Washington, D.C. to stop Donald Trump from preventing the USAID monies from being implemented, from USAID being active not only in the United States, but plainly its principal purpose in nations overseas. We'll talk about the suspension, the hiatus, effectively, the stay that the Supreme Court has placed upon that order, telling the Trump administration until that stay that it could not, in fact, bring the USAID to its knees. The Supreme Court intervening this past week to suspend that order. The implications of that, again, are huge, as are other things that are going around in the courts of our nation, having to do, yes, indeed, with the employees, the workers, the civil servants of our nation. 340 million people in our nation as of approximately right now, 2.4 million of them in the federal workforce. Now, plainly not all of them have been affected by the dramatic, draconian things that this president, my president, has done in recent weeks to not only stop those civil servants from doing the assignments that they have been given, many of them across many, many different areas, but also limiting thereby the access that you have to government by virtue of stopping those employees from doing their jobs, limiting the capacity of government to support you and do its principal function, which is to serve you, to support you, to ensure that you're safe and secure, to take care that the laws of the United States, as the Constitution says, are properly and faithfully executed. We'll talk about some things that happened just this past week. Some good news, believe it or not, coming out of something called the Merit Systems Protection Board with respect to six of those 2.4 million employees. And we'll also talk about other things that are happening across the board in agencies of the federal government that, yes, indeed, affect you on a regular basis. Lots and lots of things to get to. As I often say, it is a lot. It is big. It is huge. And the news continues to animate all of us. Regardless of your own particular philosophical political, partisan views about the world. There are things that are happening in America right now with which we must all concur. One of them was the subject principally of our discussion of last week here on this broadcast, Amicus Law Review. It was in that broadcast that I offered my non-hyperbolic assessment that, in fact, on February 18th, the previous Tuesday, the president not only had changed the Constitution once again, but probably with the encouragement and force and strength of what John Roberts and five other members of the Supreme Court had told him some 8 months earlier, that is, that he can be and should be active and nimble and strong and muscular, not entangled by things like criminal prosecutions, not entangled by other things that would prevent him from doing anything that he wants, not only granting him immunities from prosecution for crimes committed in the office, giving him complete, absolute immunity for engagements with, yes, that's right, the Department of Justice responsible for administering the rule of law in America. Not only doing that, but also articulating, as John Roberts did from his pen, a view of our presidency that we have never seen before. Donald Trump taking up that direction, that permission, that authorization given to him by the Chief Justice and by a modest majority of the Supreme Court, not without virulent, vigorous dissent from three members of the Supreme Court, taking up that instruction that he can do almost anything he wants. He indeed has set about to do just those things in the past 10 days. And so on February 18th, as we discussed at great length in our last broadcast, the United States president, my president, your president, said this. He said, no employee of the executive branch, the execution portion of our Constitution, second article of our Constitution, no employee of the executive branch, no one inside the executive branch, including not only cabinet officers and cabinet employees, we saw them just this past week for the first time gathered around Donald Trump's cabinet table, but also agency heads of other agencies that are independent. He said no employee of the executive branch acting in their official capacity can advance an interpretation of the law as the position of the United States that contravenes. You all know what that means. That means you can't object to, can't oppose the president or the attorney general's opinion on a matter of law. As he said last week at great length, l'état c'est moi, that of course coming out of Louis XIV in France and other traditions from Great Britain of the 17th century as well, that the president of the United States in 2025 declaring himself the law. And that applies, of course, to regulations, guidance, positions in litigation, everything. That's what he did 10 days ago this past week, providing the bookend to that, creating a domestic new order, now creating a new world order, a new international order. Again, not hyperbolically stated, not overstating what happened in the Oval Office of just this past week, a new world order created by this president. Again, contrary not only to all of the presidencies that have preceded him, arguably with the exception of his own a couple of terms ago, but contrary even to the authority that he has under the Constitution. We'll talk a little bit about some of the predicates for that as well, and the importance of understanding the significance, the historical significance, the meaning of what happened just this past week in Washington, D.C., at the verbs and the adjectives and the nouns and the venom of our president in the White House. All of that coming up on Amicus, a Law Review.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Governor Tony Evers has released his budget, calling this the most pro-kid budget in state history. This is now the fourth time that Evers has put forth a budget proposal, and the three prior were all met with a similar fate. Republicans in the legislature rejected it entirely. Again this year, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss called the budget dead on arrival. To a certain extent, this is what we've come to expect from this era of divided government in Wisconsin. In previous years, Evers has eventually signed Republican-authored budgets and used his line-item veto powers to make certain changes. But could he play hardball this time around and threaten to veto the entire budget? Is there anything in this pro-kid budget that has to be there? Things like education funding or clean water protections or Medicaid expansion? With everything going on in Washington, now might be the right time for Evers to fight for these proposals and fight for Wisconsinites in any way he can.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on Air.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel, your host this hour and also next hour in our weekend, our weekly examination of issues related to the rule of law, justice, government, and the operation of our nation, and yes, indeed, our place on the face of the planet. Joined here in the studios of Civic Media by my outstanding producer, Max, and together we are taking, soliciting, encouraging your questions, your observations, your comments about all things, especially including this major news story of just this past week. That phone number is 855-752-4842. You can call in. You can also drop a comment or a question, which Max and I will digest in the drop box here at Civic Media. We'll make certain that you're a part of our discussion. Let us begin, as we often do, talking about the rule of law with the United States Constitution, doing a bit of civics, as we necessarily do. A lot of people watching what happened yesterday in Washington, D.C., that calamitous, catastrophic exchange between the president, the vice president, and Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, invited there, arguably anticipating the execution of an agreement, a treaty, if you will, that would have affected mineral rights, the possibility of opening a door to possibly a path toward peace in Ukraine. Unclear exactly how that would have happened. Never got anywhere near to that because of what happened in the White House, because of this intersection between the authoritarian nature of our current president and the domestically resigned and reserved, rather, view and posture of the Ukrainian president, who came there to advocate for his nation, which, again, is what leaders of foreign nations can and should do, and raising the question of, again, responsibilities for our, certainly our domestic policy, which we have talked about, but also our international policy. Let's go back to the Constitution. What did James Madison tell us about the authority that, yes, indeed, my president, Donald Trump, and to some extent, the vice president and others, the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, also their ambassadors in the room in the Oval Office when this calamity happened. What does the Constitution say about the authority of the executive to engage in these kinds of engagements? And the answer is, it is certainly derivative, but you know it well. Among the most important powers, of course, in Article 2 of the Constitution given to a president, are indeed the powers to be the commander-in-chief. That's the big one. That's the one that we talk about a lot and even talk about recently when it comes to changes in the Defense Department, which we may get to later in the second hour or at a future broadcast. He is the commander-in-chief of our armed services. That is no small authority. But the Constitution also gives him, of course, the right, with the advice and consent of the Senate, to make treaties. Provided that two-thirds of these senators concur in that. And also the president given the authority to nominate, and also with the consent of the Senate, appointing ambassadors. And this, the Constitution implicitly provides other authorities when it talks about the obligation of a president to take care that the laws of the nation be faithfully executed, and to ensure that the commission of all officers of the United States of America are consistent with those laws. That's what the Constitution says about this international, non-domestic authority of our president. The reality is that Article 1, the legislature created once again by our founding fathers, says a whole lot more about the responsibilities of our Congress when it comes to international affairs, and you know what those are as well. The big one, once again, it is huge to declare war,
and involving the captures on land and water. That is huge. We haven't done that recently. There have been an awful lot of pieces of legislation that attempt to implement that, and we have plainly been involved in wars without declarations. But that is there. That is there in Section 8 of Article 1 of the Constitution. More significantly, or at least as significantly, commerce with foreign nations. Foreign nations, that's in Section 8, to regulate commerce with foreign nations among the several states and with the Indian tribes. That is the third bullet point, if you will, of the express obligations of the Congress to become involved in international affairs, to engage in commercial regulation when it comes to our connections with our alliances, even our animosities toward foreign nations. There's reference to imports as well, all kinds of things, again, explicit and implicit in Article 1 of the Constitution that grant the United States Congress authority in this area. Why am I talking about all that? Well, it is important to understand not only what the basis for what we saw yesterday in Friday in the Oval Office was all about, but also to understand that Congress has a role in this, too. And we have seen plainly, not only, as I said at the top of our broadcast, the positive and very embracing reception that the president of Ukraine received by that Congress, by members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans alike, early in the morning, breakfast meetings, individual meetings, a time of, frankly, celebration of the alliance between the United States and Ukraine, the alliance between the United States and our traditional allies, announced, articulated, reaffirmed in the morning on Friday by virtue of the authorities granted the Congress to become involved in these kinds of things. And when it comes to the specific reason for Volodymyr Zelensky to be here, that is this plan to execute this agreement about the harvesting, the involvement of the United States in getting minerals from the lands, the grounds of Ukraine. That's commerce. That's commerce with foreign nations. And although the president does have executive authorities, Congress necessarily involved in this. And so as we talk about exactly what happened yesterday and think about it in the context of the rule of law, important to recognize that the president has great authorities, but so does the Congress. Something overlooked as we recoil from the horror of what happened yesterday, as the president unilaterally, not hyperbolic to say this, unilaterally reestablished the world order in about 7 minutes yesterday in the White House, in the Oval Office, in a conversation with Volodymyr Zelensky. How did this come about? Well, we know that Volodymyr Zelensky's arrangement to come to Washington was fairly hurriedly put together, again, presumably to implement this treaty, this arrangement for the harvesting of minerals from Ukraine. Was meant to smooth over as well some of the rift between the president and Volodymyr Zelensky, our president and the Ukrainian president. You recall well that in recent times, the president had not referred to Putin as a dictator, but referred to Zelensky as a dictator, had also said without any foundation, misstating recent history, which every American knows to be untrue, that somehow Ukraine was the aggressor in this war. All of that causing a rift between Ukraine and our nation. The notion was that the president of Ukraine would come to this nation to try to address that and also to seal this agreement. It was pretty much demanded by Donald Trump. Ukraine would hand over billions of dollars worth of mineral rights, arguably to repay the military aid provided under the presidency of Joe Biden and Congress over the 3 years since Russia's full-fledged invasion in 2022, and that is what it was. Seemed to make nice with Mr. Zelensky by telling reporters on Thursday that they would have a good meeting. We'll talk about whether or not that meeting did in fact play out that way. It did not, as Amicus Law Review continues.
This is 93.5 The Tap. CBS News Brief. Mixed reaction to the shouting match between President Trump and Ukrainian President Zelensky in the Oval Office yesterday. Former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta called it a terrible and disturbing moment that will have repercussions.
I don't think there's any question that this is going to weaken the United States' credibility when it comes to dealing with alliances in the world.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham sees what went down differently.
I have never been more proud of the president. I was very proud of J.D. Vance standing up for our country.
The faithful have been in St. Peter's Square in Rome praying for Pope Francis. The 88-year-old has been in the hospital for 2 weeks suffering from double pneumonia.
We are one with the Pope in this situation. We come here to pray for him. We show our solidarity through faith.
Vatican sources say he had a setback yesterday, but a very restful night. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
An update from the Combine. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, where the workouts and team interviews continue. I asked former Badger and Muskego, Wisconsin native Hunter Waller how hectic the week has been.
It's busy. It's definitely, you know, people that I've talked to, guys that have been here in the past and everything, and they tell you how busy it is and all the people that you meet and stuff, but you don't actually understand it until you're here. It's great. You know, you get to hang out. We got all the safeties in our group, so we get to hang out and talk to them all day.
Waller, a safety at Wisconsin, ran a 4.57 in the 40-yard dash. Baseball, the Brewers lost to the Giants in Cactus League action, 9-2 out in Arizona. Basketball, the Bucks are in Dallas tonight against the Mavericks. Marquette is on the road against Georgetown. And number 11th-ranked Wisconsin faces number 8th-ranked Michigan State in East Lansing. Tip-off time for that one tomorrow afternoon at 12:30. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Today, sunshine and a high near 27. Clear skies tonight, a low of 13. Sunshine, 40 for your Sunday. On Monday, slight chance of a shower, mostly sunny, and we warm to 49. For Tuesday, some rain showers and highs in the upper 40s.
Currently, 13 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. If you're headed to vote in New Hampshire's traditional March town meetings and need to register, bring proof of citizenship documents with you or you won't be able to vote. 20 other states have similar legislation pending. New Hampshire's HB 1569 eliminated sworn citizenship affidavits, subject to fines or imprisonment for lying, as evidence of citizenship. It now accepts only a birth certificate, U.S. passport, or naturalization papers. There is no evidence of any widespread non-citizen voting in the state, and the law was immediately challenged in federal district court as unconstitutional and an unreasonable burden. President Donald Trump's recent unfounded claims of widespread non-citizen voting generated a rush to tighten proof of citizenship legislation around the country. Voting Rights Lab is tracking 35 proof of citizenship bills in 20 states, many based on model legislation pushed by former Trump election lawyer Cleta Mitchell and her Only Citizens Vote coalition. Just this month, proof of citizenship bills were advanced in Wyoming and Missouri. 18 other states are considering bills adding proof of citizenship requirements, and the pending SAVE Act in Congress would require it for federal elections. A 2024 study by the Brennan Center for Justice found 9% of Americans don't have ready access to their citizenship documents. We have links to the Voting Rights Lab tracker and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Earl Ingram.
The one and only Professor Bob Harvey has graced the airlines with us. Let's go to Vincent.
With this new administration, African American history is under assault. To Professor Harvey, how important are we, is it to, for us to fight back, not only for Black History Month, but throughout the year?
African American history is not going anywhere. Start digging into history. You find out that long before the Mayflower, Blacks were already here.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. T. Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller and from the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, chair of the musical theater department, Mark Hansen. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with T. Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
My name is Jim Santel, and this is Amicus, a law review, our weekly weekend review of rule of law, events, issues, concerns in America and beyond. Spending a good deal of our time this weekend talking about this world-changing, world order reorganizing event that happened yesterday, Friday, in Washington, D.C. Our president, our vice president, loudly, four cameras, rebuking the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, berating him, and in this explosive exchange, unlike anything we've seen before coming from the White House, telling him that he has not been grateful and does not deserve the attention that the president had initially invited to give to him. And so what do we know about the lead up to all this? An awful lot of hints now that we look back on this, to this changing world order that it was effectively accomplished on Friday, that late this past week. We know that early in the week when Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, was there, Emmanuel Macron grabbing the forearm of our president and correcting him when it comes to this concept that somehow all of the support given by Europe and arguably by the United States, all of this was loaned to the Ukrainians for the purposes of this war, intended to be paid back. Emmanuel Macron making very clear the president is wrong about that, exhibiting not only a difference of opinion, a difference of facts, and articulating accurately, the president of France doing this, what was the reality, but also indicating this growing rift between our traditional allies in the established world order. Keir Starmer, who is the newly elected British prime minister, also appearing in the White House just this past week, not quite as dramatically as did Emmanuel Macron, but also exhibiting explicitly and implicitly disagreements with our president about understandings of world history very recently and about the nature of the relationship between our long-standing, arguably our strongest ally to this time. And then we also have, as you recall well, this incredible speech given by our vice president, J.D. Vance, on February 14th to the security folks in Europe, the European democracies, in which he said that the greatest threat to our European allies was not from Russia, not from China, not from without, but from within. And rather than providing them with a sense of assurance about the continued world order in which we are allied with them, said that the European governments, including that of the United Kingdom, had retreated from their values, ignoring concerns on migration and free speech. And the speech itself, of course, receiving loud and articulate disapproval from our allies. Once again, all of that leading up to what happened on Friday of this past week in the White House. The encounter, after initially some indication that it would go forward as a diplomatic discussion, which we've often seen between allies, the shaking of hands upon the arrival of the Ukrainian president, some polite exchanges, even without great warmth. But the encounter, once again, very quickly turned hostile, overtly hostile, when they sat down. And, of course, the Ukrainian president there begins by talking about the predicates for the war, noting it went back to 2014 when Moscow, the aggressor, which again has been contrary to what the president has said about who the aggressor has been in this case, Moscow first seized Crimea way back in 2014 and occupied territory then in eastern Ukraine more recently in this war, begins to provide the predicates for the American people, for the international community, which all of us know to be true, thinking that that is plainly not controversial, as a part of his entreaty, yes, indeed, to our American president to strengthen the tie between our nations and to secure whatever he can do to ensure the security of his own nation against the aggressor, Vladimir Putin. However, our vice president sharply interrupts almost immediately, begins assailing Volodymyr Zelensky. He says this. He says, "I think it's disrespectful for you to come to the Oval Office to try to litigate in front of the American media. You should be thanking the president," which indeed the president of Ukraine has done repeatedly, including earlier that day, thanking the American people, thanking the Congress, thanking the prior president and this president for the support that he has gotten in that war. Our vice president accused Zelensky of mounting a propaganda tour in the United States. He said this. He said, do you think it's respectful to come to the Oval Office and attack the administration? Attack? No indication whatsoever that that's what Zelensky was doing. An administration that's trying to prevent the destruction of your country. That was the opening foray in this shouting match that then ensued. Zelensky tried to respond. He said, you know, lots of questions there. Let me try to unpack them. Not permitted the opportunity to do that. Said that the United States could feel threatened by Russia one day, which, of course, is entirely true. That's a part of the common understanding that has animated the alliances between our nation and Western Europe for years and years. The concern about a hostile Russia, a hostile China. Zelensky said appropriately, rightly, geographically, said, you have a nice ocean and don't feel now, but you will feel it in the future, indicating that indeed what you do, what we do in Ukraine may have implications for our own safety and security at some point in the future, as it does right now. That plainly triggered Donald Trump, who did not like the notion that plainly Zelensky was articulating rightly and accurately, a history that Donald Trump has rejected in recent times. And also this notion that somehow this alliance is not as strong as it should be. Donald Trump cut him off and so said, don't tell us what we're going to feel. He said, you're not in a good position. He's speaking to Zelensky. You don't have the cards right now. And added, you're gambling with World War III. Amazing. Vice President continued, have you said thank you once? And again, the answer to that is yes, Mr. Vice President. There have been repeated expressions of thanks for years now, including just that morning. All of this gets worse. And you can see, you can hear not only the recorded version of this, it's just under 7 minutes long. It changed the world and reordered the world order quite dramatically in those hostile exchanges. And in the tone and the substance of what was said, Donald Trump reordered the world and the alliances that have existed between our nation and, yes, Ukraine, but also our European allies and other allies around the world who are now recoiling in disbelief as this has happened. Interestingly, some of the same congressmen who greeted Zelensky with great joy and great admiration and support earlier in the morning, by the afternoon, almost moments after this calamity happened, reversed their positions entirely. And again, rather than expressing their independent constitutional authority to engage in issues related to international affairs, including commerce, minerals, those kinds of things, basically said that they were wrong. And that Zelensky, among others, presumably in the present Ukrainian government, should resign because of the hostility shown in the Oval Office. In fact, the hostility was all ours toward Zelensky. Afterwards, curiously, our president came out and said that he and Zelensky had had a very meaningful meeting. I suppose that depends upon how you define meaningful, but that he had determined that the Ukrainian leader was, in his words, not ready for peace if America is involved. He said Zelensky can come back when he is ready for peace. He said along the way that the president from Ukraine had disrespected the United States of America in his cherished Oval Office. Much was learned that could never be understood without conversation under such fire and pressure. That's the statement from our president. It's amazing what comes out through emotion. One of the final things that our president said, even as that calamitous exchange was happening, was that, gee, this will make good television. That's the statement of our president. And the rule of law takeaway, of course, is that, yes, indeed, the president has great authorities when it comes to the establishment and the maintenance. And, yes, indeed, the changes, if those are appropriate in the world order. He has got authorities to do these kinds of things. He exercised those authorities in a way that John Roberts presumably would have supported if he had known about this when he wrote those words back in July of last year, giving the president huge authorities to act with great muscularity and speed and not entangled with things like laws and even tradition, even history, we also wonder where the United States Congress is in its execution under the rule of law of responses to this that in 7 minutes changed the world order yesterday, changed the position of our nation on the face of this planet, and now, using a Sharpie, as the president sometimes does, can redraw the alliances on the face of the planet. The question as we go forward this weekend and in the days ahead, will these reorderings domestically, the president is now the law in our nation, and the president has now redrawn not only who our allies are, but the ways in which we will interact with nations up until Friday who were our foes, our enemies, who would like nothing more than to destroy us. All of those things have happened in the last 10 days. And yes, indeed, if you are concerned about the future of our nation, both domestically, I am the law. If you are concerned about our position on the face of this planet, we no longer have a relationship, presumably with our European allies. And we look now to someone else to lead the free world. Perhaps it is Macron. Perhaps it is Starmer. Perhaps it is the head of the Economic Union. Our president recently commenting about that and saying the economic unit, again, this is historically simply untrue, meant to and forgive the language, but he said the EU put together to screw America. That is simply not true. That is not what the EU is all about, but it may well be that the EU may produce what we have been for all of our lifetimes, which is the voice and the face and the movement of democracy and freedom on the face of this planet. Now being ceded, presumably, to someone else, maybe, again, the French president, maybe the British prime minister, maybe the head of the Economic Union, who will take on what has been our role until Friday of this past week. We have got callers, and we appreciate so much their involvement in our discussion at this very important time in American history as we assess our status on the face of this planet. Rick from Waukesha. Rick, appreciate your being a part of our discussion on our broadcast.
Thank you, and thank you for taking this call. I have some important information because of my growing up on farms and around them.
Very good. Tell us about it, Rick. Yes.
People that became doctors eventually and ancestors of doctors and became beginners of universities and whatnot. And I kind of learned being around them on the farm as a hand for a while, that there's certain words and things they do. Now, Civic Media has a farmers program.
Yes.
On it. And I can't think of the woman's name, but she's very sharp. And she could help with this, what I'm talking about, with her knowledge. The value of that position on the planet where the Ukraine is and the property being amongst the neighbors they're with is so much larger than I don't think Donald Trump realizes, or he just knows what he wants. But you know, in America, when they mined the salt mines, they eventually used it for storing oil because of the problems they had with the Second World War with the outside tanks. So it became very valuable in that sense. And when he said so many questions, now, if you want to put out a value of property, you have to figure out if it's farmland, how much wheat do they sow on that property? Excuse me, I'm having an ear problem at the moment. But the value of the position for satellite connection by towers.
All kinds of things, right? Right. Absolutely, Rick, right? Property is important, right? And as you said, the relationships that we have with the people on that property are our longstanding traditions. Your views based upon your involvement with farms, your perspectives on that, hugely important. Again, underscoring the significance of what happened in America just yesterday. Rick, we appreciate so much the perspective that you bring to this discussion. We'll have more of this as Amicus Law Review continues.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson joins us.
There's a hockey game tomorrow night between Canada and the U.S. Everywhere up in Canada when they were playing the game, the U.S. was being booed. Imagine how you would feel if your neighbor were constantly saying, I'm taking your backyard. You would find that very serious. That's what's happening around the world. We are going to have no friends, period.
That is
and
so
that
well put.
Matters.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
93.5 The Tap.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel, and this is the final segment of our first hour here on our weekend broadcast, taking your calls, your questions, as always, at 855-752-4842. Appreciate very much Rick's comments about his perspectives coming from farmlands, his involvement with words, language, positions on the planet, as he said, the importance of relationships and the ways in which everything from salt mines to our doctors and ancestors are all important. Thank you so much for that, Rick. We also have calling in from Madison. Dick, appreciate your participation in our conversation this weekend.
Well, James, to the extortionist in chief, that's how I'm going to refer to him going forward, a little information. When they made that accusation about you don't have the cards, a nice comeback would have been, the cards were all there in my favor. At the beginning of this war, early into it, about 2-3 months in, I just read where they had about 19, they being Russia, 19.6% of the land. Now they're at 19.2. I would call that a stalemate, but they've also lost close to 800,000 people. And then when he makes the accusation, nobody wants to fight the war with you. What about in Russia's case, employing North Koreans? And at the beginning of it, the Wagner group, and he was so weakened at that point early in the war that he almost had a coup where they took over. What were they, 100 miles from Moscow?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And then they make that accusation. If they would have gave him the power, in my mind, and last summer, I mean, what he needed, and not stonewalled from this Congress, we could have toppled him. And I'm talking about Putin now.
Right, right.
And he would go away in a hurry if he loses in Ukraine, in my opinion.
Yep. And Dick, an awful lot of things we need to keep in mind. All the things you described plainly, obviously, the involvement of the North Koreans, as you see, the land percentages that are there, the things that happened early in the war and recently, we need to focus on those in trying to get a sense of what our president is saying makes any sense at all. It does not, as you just said, Dick, so very well. The things we heard, again, implicitly, explicitly from the president in recent times, completely wrong and belied by the history. Again, Dick, appreciate so much your initial comment as well about the extortionary aspect of all of this, that in order to sue for and maybe obtain some peace there in Ukraine, we need to have access to your minerals. An interesting and very troubling way of executing our foreign policy, our diplomacy. Our Secretary of State sitting right there mum throughout all of this. The ambassador from Ukraine with her hands in her head in her hands, disbelieving what is going on and seeing the demise of this relationship, the change in world order that you have so accurately previously described, Dick, describing again today here on our broadcast. Appreciate your comment tremendously. Also, Mark calling in this weekend. Mark, always value your perspectives on what's going on in America. And again, the legal implications, the broad implications of where we are right now in our nation. Mark, go right ahead.
Concerned about in Federalist 67,
that, and of course, you know, that I've said that before, and that Congress needs to step up here. That Donald Trump shouldn't be talking about our foreign policy, our tariffs, and that kind of thing, because I think under Article 8, Section 8 of Article 1 of the Constitution, it is Congress that's supposed to be regulating our tariffs and duties and that kind of thing, rather than just the president on his own doing this kind of thing. It is just deeply disturbing. Yeah. And then, of course, with Pete Hegseth now taking away our cybersecurity in regards to Russia, which is just kind of seeding, you know, what they want to open us up to Russia, attacking our water treatment plants and our electric grid, and it's just all deeply concerning. We're just seeing, are we surrendering to Russia? It seems to me that there's that movement there, and nobody has courage enough to speak up against this president, who has clearly just kind of lost his marbles, perhaps.
And articulating again a lot of things, maybe not even to justify what he is doing, but simply to recast the way in which we understand our world, articulating things again, not only related to the genesis, the beginnings of this war. No, Volodymyr Zelensky was not indeed the aggressor in this situation, just the opposite. To your point, as you reaffirmed today, Mark, very important, it is Section 8. It's sub-point 3. The Congress itself regulates commerce with foreign nations. Hard to imagine, Mark, as you're saying, a subject matter that's more clearly within the ambit, maybe shared with the presidency, with the executive branch when it comes to this kind of thing. We're talking about this planned deal involving the harvesting of minerals and the acquisition of monies, arguably to repay some of the monies given to the Ukrainians to prosecute this war. All of that should be the subject of review and of analysis and of examination, whether that arrangement, whether that agreement with Ukraine is right or wrong. That's the discussion that should be going on right now in America. And if indeed Volodymyr Zelensky had somehow stayed there, there was a plan for plainly a press conference afterwards. That would have been interesting to listen to as our president once again spars with our allies, including Starmer and Macron and others, from the East Room of the White House. That was scheduled also, not executed in the day of the presence there by the Ukrainian president. Also supposed to execute this agreement. And in the calamity and the appropriate focus on the calamity that began this visit, issues related to the legitimacy of this plan and the long-term implications of what this plan would have for the United States, for Ukraine. What is the notion? Where are we headed on all this? That should have been the subject not only of our discussion, frankly, this morning and in other broadcasts across our nation, across the world. Instead, we're talking about this rift and this dramatic change again in the world order that animates us as we go forward. We know as well that all of this happens at a time when our foreign, formerly allies, are looking to us for leadership. As I said before, an awful lot of people understanding now that there is a gap, there is a vacancy, if you will, in the leadership that should be out there. And the question is, who takes that spot? The premise, the theory advancing in this, our first hour of Amicus Law Review, is the changes happening in our nation, a huge domestic change 10 days or so ago, and then this additional dramatic change in the world order just this past week, changing America, changing where we are in the face of the planet. When Amicus Law Review continues, we're going to talk about some domestic changes as well affecting all of us. Stay with us for that.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allbaugh Show.
Todd Allbaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. We'll take a look back at the Badger basketball game over the weekend and also find out whether we still have a country. If we do, join us.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Brian Lomax, defend the vote.
The SAVE Act will make it harder for all Americans to vote. Now you need a passport. Wisconsin specific, 5 million people don't have a passport. Now it's $130 per passport.
Even if you can afford to get a passport, that is a months-long process. Unless you planned a year ahead, you're not going to be able to vote.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Stacey Lynn. Voices were raised in the Oval Office yesterday. Things got quite contentious in a meeting between President Trump and Ukrainian President Zelensky.
You're either going to make a deal or we're out. And if we're out, you'll fight it out. I don't think it's going to be pretty.
CBS's Major Garrett on what led to the chaos.
The reason Zelensky is hesitant about an immediate ceasefire is he doesn't want that ceasefire to essentially say the facts on the ground will never change and Russia and all the territory it's occupied and occupying remains Russian. He'd like to have some conversation about that. That's why he's reluctant. The Trump administration considers that to be ungrateful and obstructive.